Your financial choices may discuss various financial-related topics and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA. We inform you that any federal tax, state tax, financial advice, or information contained in this communication is not intended to be personalized or specific in nature or to be relied upon for your personal situation in any circumstance. The advice and information are not intended and cannot be used as a tax opinion letter nor used for the purpose of avoiding tax-related penalties. For personalized advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I am a CPA, CFP professional, and AEP on the web at yourfinancialchoices.com. You can listen online each and every week at WDIY.org under public affairs or on many streaming services as well as the WDIY app. Good evening. Today is April 22nd, 2026. The markets were up today with the Dow closing at 49,490, the NASDAQ at 24,657, and the S&P at 7,137. Our topic this evening is Age Matters. We are not taking callers this evening, except for those who are interested in helping to support our spring fund drive, and you can call in, I believe, at 610-758-8810, 610-758-8810, but online is really the easiest, and anytime you can do that at WDIY.org or on the WDIY app by clicking Donate. If you do have questions, those can be submitted through yourfinancialchoices.com. Yourfinancialchoices.com. You can submit questions anytime as well, and I will do. I usually respond to people right away, and if it's a good question, I can share it on the radio as well, and I don't, you know, disclose any of your personal information. And I also love show ideas. So if you have any show ideas, you're welcome to submit those through yourfinancialchoices.com as well. So tonight, again, age matters. And I do want to remind people that we do just discuss general financial planning topics. This is an educational show, as our opening disclosures indicated. So when we talk about age matters in planning, it really does. And I do try to do a show on this every so often because people kind of forget, you know, we go along our lives. It's like, oh my gosh, I didn't know I got so old so fast. I didn't know how it happened. Or you might think about it on your birthday and you don't, you know, reflect how that might impact your financial decisions, your financial options, your financial benefits. You know, you might think, oh, I get the 10% discount at the, you know, at the diner or something like that, or I can, you know, apply to AARP or something. But those age milestones may count for more than you realize, and it helps to pay attention and understand what they are because it could impact your financial decisions. You know, as I say at the end of every show, be proactive, not reactive. That's so that you're in front of these decisions. You know when you hit these mile markers, what it might mean to you, and can you take advantage? So we get older each year, and we want to make sure you understand what that means. And I saw this particularly when preparing the 2025 tax returns. Thank goodness we're done with tax season now. But when I saw the 2025 tax returns, we did see this come up quite a bit for those people who turned age 65 or were already age 65 or older who became eligible for the enhanced senior tax deduction. Not everybody got that just because their age. It depends on the income that you make, and I'll talk about that in a little bit. But generally, it does become increasingly important the older we get that age does matter, and we need to consider that in our financial planning. So let's start at the beginning, which is where I usually start when I talk about age and how it matters. Birth to death. So birth, what are the important dates, or more importantly, what are the important ages? And the dates will depend for each one of you as to when you're born. So you'll have to do your own math to come up with the dates, and I will give ages as we go along here. But let's pretend you are someone who just had a child. So the minute you're born, you do become a deduction for someone on the tax return, and you may become a taxpayer as well. If the baby's employed, yes, I said that, your baby may get, some earnings. Maybe they're a little baby model. Maybe you hire them when they're 4, 5, 4, 10, or 12 to work in your business. So at young ages, our children can become our employees as well, or may become employed, you know, whether they're models or actors or, you know, who knows. So those children can become a deduction on your tax return, assuming you qualify, you know, to claim them as a dependent and all that goes with that. If I talked about just that, it would probably take up the whole show. So you know, typically they're your relative. They live in your home for more than 6 months. You provide more than half their support, et cetera, et cetera. They potentially and expectedly would be your dependent. Now, what other benefits come with that? What does it mean to have a dependent? Well, if they're your dependent, there could be some other types of tax credits or deductions that you may get for having those children. Typically, there's something called the child tax credit. There's something called a dependent care credit. There are education credits. So we will talk about a number of those things. One other tax benefit, I guess, that came out of the One Big Beautiful Bill, you heard me already refer to the age 65 or older enhanced senior deduction. Another tax benefit, I would say, or benefit that came out of that was something called the Trump accounts. And if you had a baby born in 2025 or 2026, if you file for this, you have to file a form, a Form 4547, to be eligible. And then there's some other criteria. The government will put $1,000 into that account, and that could be invested. And I think they are choosing the investments. It's tied to some type of index fund. And that $1,000, as they have projected after 18 years, if nothing else goes in, would be worth $6,000 in 18 years. So one might think, oh, that's kind of free money. Let me have that. Personally, as a financial advisor, I think there are some better options, but some people get excited and think, you know, that $1,000 is, like free money. So they may be eligible for those when they have that baby. Let me talk about that just for a minute so I can close the door on what I'm referring to. And what I mean is if someone will give you that $1,000, the government's going to put $1,000 into that account. At age 18, that account becomes available to that 18-year-old, but there still are some handcuffs on it. And some people don't even understand all that or follow the threads on that. But what I understand, and frankly, I probably don't know about these as much as I should yet, but because it's kind of fairly new and I hadn't seen them come through yet. But if it's invested and it grows to $6,000 at age 18, the child has access to it, but they're treating it almost like an IRA. And anyone who knows about IRAs come out income taxable at ordinary income tax rates. There's usually also restrictions around IRAs. And what I had found was it said the money cannot be withdrawn from Trump accounts until the account holders reach age 18. At that point, children will get control of their accounts and they can start using the money for certain expenses like education, first home purchases, or to start a business without incurring penalties. The White House says the accounts will be treated like traditional IRAs once the young account holders are adults. Well, IRAs come out ordinary income taxable. And then they demonstrated how these accounts can grow from age 18 to 27 and beyond, how they can grow. Well, that growth, again, is ordinary income. Ordinary income is different than if you took a same $1,000 and put it into equity account and it grows tax favored treatment on long term capital gains and qualified dividends. So I'll talk more about that when we come back from the break. If you have questions, those can go through the website, yourfinancialchoices.com. We are in our spring fund drive and appreciate your support. We'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Did you know there are many ways you can support the programs you love on WDIY? You can make a gift of appreciated stock or mutual funds, a powerful way to give, and you may avoid capital gains taxes. If you're 70 and a half or older, you can also make a tax-smart gift directly from your IRA. And if you have a donor-advised fund, you can donate directly from the account and benefit from a more tax- and cost-efficient way of giving. To learn more, contact Seamus McGrogan at 610-694-8100, extension 3.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices, and I have in the studio with me Seamus McGrogan.
Hey, Lori. Happy to be here. Speak of the devil there. You just mentioned me there.
I know.
So if you do have questions about giving to WDIY and the different ways you can give, feel free to call my office line, as you just heard there. But the reason I'm stopping in quickly into the studio is because it is our spring fund drive. We have heard from so many people over the past couple weeks who have gotten us almost to our goal. We're getting very close. We're in the home stretch now. We are in a good place to wrap up by the end of this week, as long as we continue to meet our program goals. So we will have a goal of 5 for this program here. We want to get 5 calls or web donations by the end of Your Financial Choices to stay on track. And I know meeting these targets certainly makes Lori happy. And last week, Lori generously offered a challenge to do that, and we met her challenge, and that was a very exciting time. So I'm here to ask, if you have not had a chance to give, especially if you're a regular listener to Your Financial Choices, now is the time to do it as we approach the end of our spring fund drive. You can make a donation at 610-758-8810 or go online to wdiy.org. Every cent that you give goes back into the programs, making sure that shows like Your Financial Choices stay on the air, which is pretty unique amongst the radio listening and public radio landscape. There's not too many shows like this.
Live taking questions, etc.
Live taking questions, and then having somebody like Lori that can talk about so many different topics and areas of finances and taxes that are hard to parse through if you're not an expert. So Lori definitely does a great service, and we love having her on the air. We want to make sure this show stays around, so you can help make that possible by making a donation, become a new member, renew your membership, or make an additional gift. It all helps us here during the spring fund drive, looking for those 5 calls or web donations by the end of the show. Again, 610-758-8810 or wdiy.org for that donation.
Thank you so much, Seamus. And thank you, listeners. We do appreciate the support. I always say that WDIY listeners are the most sophisticated listeners. So please, chime in your support, and we'll know that you're a sophisticated listener. Thank you. Okay, so let me just kind of close the loop on what I'm referring to for the Trump account. Remember, I said they're treated like IRAs. That's treated like ordinary income, depending on how much that grows. And there may not be unfettered access to that. There could be restrictions on, you know, when to access it before, if they are being treated like IRAs. That there's a early withdrawal penalty if you tap it before age 59 and a half, unless there's certain exceptions. So if the White House is saying these are like IRAs, then perhaps there would be a penalty if you access it before age 59 and a half. And except for those things like education, a new home or a new business. So what would be the alternative? You heard me say, well, what if I took $1,000 and put it just into a brokerage account? And that could grow. That could be income taxable, but it's going to be income taxable in a very different way. So that $1,000, if in 18 there's a valid expense that they could take it out at 18, $6,000 would be included in taxable income. Now, an 18-year-old might not have, you know, much income, so maybe it would be a big deal. It's subject to income tax, but There are thresholds for children who take out investment income. There are thresholds which could be subject that income to kiddie tax. So number one, I'm wondering, would that be subject to kiddie tax? Number two, if that continues to grow and they wait to take it out, you know, even in X number of years further down the line, it's more and more ordinary income. Whereas if I take $1,000 and I invest it and at age 18, it might be worth $6,000. If I took it out, my cost basis was $1,000. I have a gain of $5,000. The capital gains tax rates are much lower than the ordinary income tax rates, and I can get to it without any kind of penalty. All right, so just be aware of that. And then, of course, they mentioned that it can be used for education, still subject to what they call the IRA rules, maybe not subject to a penalty if you use it for education, but if you have a 529 education account and you put money in, that grows income tax-free, and it's used. And if it's used for qualified education expenses, it's also income tax-free. So grows income tax-free and is income tax-free. And guess what? The owner of the account is the one who controls it, not the 18-year-old when they turn 18. So the parent, if a parent is the owner of a 529 account, then they can control it and use it for the child's education. And, you know, there's just some additional tax benefits there. If I took, you know, put $1,000 into a 529 as a resident of Pennsylvania, I get a deduction on my Pennsylvania return. And New York gives a deduction up to $10,000. And certain other states do, more and more states, in fact, give deductions for contributions to 529 accounts. So that may or may not be a better way to go. And you would need to keep track of those accounts as well, because they could be subject to escheatment if someone, meaning gets turned over to the state, if you forget about it. Let's say you get the account and you have that original $1,000 and then you kind of forget about it. Well, if you forget about it for too long of a period of time, they turn that back over to, they turn it over to the state, and then you have to, you know, file an unclaimed property claim. All right, so just be aware of your options, be aware of how you might, you know, use those kinds of funds for kids. I personally prefer the 529 option. So under age 13, you heard me mention there could also be something called a dependent care credit. So for your 12-year-olds or younger dependents, that you might still have daycare or aftercare expenses for because you and your spouse are working, or maybe one of the spouses is disabled, you may qualify for the child and dependent care credit. And you need to coordinate that with flexible spending accounts. They did raise the amount that you could put for flexible spending account for dependent care cost. It used to be $5,000. I'm going to have to verify how much it went up to, but it used to be $5,000. They've raised that, so you can put aside money. I think it's $7,500 now for dependent care costs from a flexible spending account. But as many parents know, child care cost, you know, probably exceeding that amount if it's a full-time credit. But you may be able to get a child dependent care credit, which could range from 20% to 35% with a maximum credit of 20% of qualified expenses, but that all depends on your income, and it's not to exceed $3,000 for one qualifying child or $6,000 for two qualifying children. So just to give you an idea of that, it depends again on the income. But if your income is, for example, over like $43,000, it's like a 20%, it's capped at 20%. But again, limited to that three or the six. And it's reduced by the amount of the flexible spending. So you say, here are the child care expenses less the flexible spending, what's left? And some of that may be subject to that extra child independent care credit. It's a little complicated to help you visualize that, but just be aware, if you have children under 13 subject to dependent care cost, you may be eligible for a dependent care expense. Just make sure you're coordinating that with your flexible spending account should you have that available to you through work. Okay. We are at our second break. If you have questions, you can send those through the website at yourfinancialchoices.com. Tonight, the phone line is open for our spring fund drive. We're looking for 5 donations during this hour. I really would appreciate any listeners who could help show your support for the show and WDIY, all the volunteers and staff here, at 610-758-8810 or online at WDIY.org. We'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
WDIY presents a selection of award-winning podcasts that air weeknights from 6 to 7 p.m. Listen to important conversations regarding art, science, business, health, and more here in the Lehigh Valley and beyond. Check our website for new topics and archived programs. WDIY podcasts are on 88.1 FM, streaming at wdiy.org, on the app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices right here on WDIY. We're looking for your support this evening for our spring fund drive. Phone number to call is 610-758-8810 or go online at WDIY.org. But I have Seamus here to give us more details about the spring fund drive.
Thank you, Lori. Stopping in real quick just to update you, we are looking for those 5 calls or web donations by the end of the program. We still need our very first donation during Your Financial Choices. So if you haven't had a chance to give during the drive, this is your sign right now. You'll be giving in support of all the programming here on WDIY, including the great public affairs and discussion programs, but also the news, both local and national and international, as well as the great music, of course. We have a huge lineup of music programs as well. You'll always find something you like. If you mainly tune in for financial advice, I bet you'll find something that you like on the music side, and then vice versa. If you are a fan of the music, you may like our news or our community discussions. We do really offer a wide range of listening options for you, and that's what we've always done here at WDIY. We've been your community resource. We are a completely independent radio. We are not connected with any, you know, big corporation or a school or anything like that that's going to pass down an endowment or anything. It is all funded by you out there, the listeners, and it is very important that we get those donations in to make sure we can continue to bring you all this great programming. So looking for those 5 donations, the way to give, 610-758-8810 or online at wdiy.org. And Lori, before I throw it back to you, I just wanted to share one of the comments that we received, because we always get lots of great comments during these fund drives. But we heard from Mary Lou in Bath, who says, WDIY is an integral part of our community, and I commend your staff and volunteers for their dedication.
So, oh, that's so nice.
Just want to thank Mary Lou for that very nice comment. And if you want to give us a comment as well, you can do that on the online form at wdiy.org. Or if you call the phone lines, tell one of our volunteer phone operators what you like about WDIY or maybe what you would like us to do in the future.
Thanks, Seamus. And we are here to help educate as well. And we do that every week on Your Financial Choices. And we appreciate our listeners' support as well. So we are talking about age, and age matters. And we are talking about, we talked about the Trump account when a baby's born in 2025, 2026. And the kind of the character of that account. We've talked about dependent care expenses for under age 13, and the flexible spending account contribution was increased for 2026 to $7,500. I want to make sure that I note to people that if you have a life event during the year, if you are someone who works at a company that has open enrollment, and in your mind you think, open enrollment, I have to wait for open enrollment. You know, I had a baby, I need to do dependent care expenses, but I have to wait for open enrollment. You don't. A life event is one of those exceptions to making a change in your benefits that you've chosen during open enrollment, okay? Whether it's kind of adjusting health insurance or changing your flexible spending. That includes if you have a change in jobs. meaning maybe a spouse loses their job and now they're going to be home, staying at home, and you don't need the child care anymore, you could notify your employer, we had a life event, we can't put money into the flexible spending account anymore because we will no longer have the child care expenses. So be aware of that as well. Some people might think that's common sense or that you would know it, but you'd be surprised. People have it drilled in their minds that, oh, open enrollment, but you do have some flexibility there. Another benefit for having children under age 17, eligible for a child tax credit. That child tax credit increased to $2,200 for 2026. It's per child. It applies to a qualifying child, meaning you have to make sure you meet the age, citizenship, dependent status, et cetera, and be under age 17. There is an income phase out such that if you make too much money, you may not qualify for the credit. If you qualify for the full amount of the 2026 credit for each child, you will have to meet those eligibility factors, and your annual income is not more than $400,000 if filing joint, $200,000 single or separate. And years ago, that income threshold was much lower. So they raised that several years ago, and it's much higher. So many more people qualify for that child tax credit. And this is where you kind of have to pay attention and be proactive. This is why I love planning and kind of being aware of these ages, is that you may be able to manage the income on your tax return somewhat by doing things like contributions to a 401k or a 403b. That's pre-tax contributions lower your income, and you may lower your income enough to qualify for some of these credits and or benefits. So there is a phase out. So parents and guardians with higher incomes may be eligible to still claim a part of the credit. But if you're over those thresholds, then you do phase out of it. But again, you may be able to manage it a little bit. Age 18 is a big age for some people, age of majority in most states. And it's time to look at those, what we call UGMA or UTMA accounts. UTMA accounts, Uniform Transfer to Minors Act. UGMA is Uniform Gift to Minors Act. And why those have those special designations is if I give money to a minor, that minor may not be able to have an account in their own name. They need a custodian. The custodian may be a parent, may be a grandparent, whomever. That custodian kind of holds on to that account for them until they reach that age of majority, again, typically age 18, and then that account can get turned over to that child. That account, when it is set up in the child's social security number. So that's for people who would be born in 2008. They would be 18 this year. Incredible. So I want to give you some little cautions about these things. If you are setting up certain investment accounts for your children, or grandma and grandpa so, you know, nicely set up an investment account when the kids are little and they forget about it and it's growing and growing, the child's income, if it is over certain thresholds, if their investment income is over certain thresholds, it will be subject to what we call the kiddie tax, which is basically the parent's tax rate. What is the most disturbing thing to me when I have children who are subject to the kiddie tax because their parents are in a very high tax bracket and the child has investment income over these certain thresholds is that the parent's income gets reported on the child's tax return on this schedule where we have to calculate the tax. And it always astounds me. I'm thinking, seriously, the IRS, you want us to report the parent's income on the child's tax return? Maybe I don't want my child knowing my income. Well, you might think, well, you know, my kid's too young. They're not going to sign their return. We're going to sign as guardian or custodian or whatever. Well, what about when the kid turns 18, 19, 20? Kiddie tax applies to people under age 24 if they're still a dependent and, you know, other criteria. So just be aware of that too. So there could be better options, or you want to be careful what kind of investments you're putting the kids in. It could be maybe an ETF that's not throwing off dividends or capital gains. Maybe there isn't a lot of income that's being thrown off, whereas a mutual fund might throw off capital gain distributions and dividends. So either watch what you're investing in or put it in something like a 529. All right. So under age 19, you're still getting a deduction for your kids if they are, you know, students. So getting a deduction for your kids once your children or other qualifying dependents turn 19, you have to start reviewing whether they, whether or not they qualify for the dependency status. They must be your child and have, or it could be another eligible relative, younger than 19 or a full-time student under age 24. So someone born in 2007 would be 19 this year. Make sure, are they a student? Then they could still be your dependent. Folks, we are at the halfway point. I'm not aware of anyone calling in to support our spring fund drive. Please use 610-758-8810 or go online at wdiy.org and click the donate button. We'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Welcome back. We are in our spring fund drive. You can contribute and help support our programming here by going to WDIY.org or to the WDIY app, as well as calling 610-758-8810. We were looking for 10 or 5 callers this hour. Hey, I would take one caller if you can, you know, maybe show a really strong sign of support. We don't want to limit you on how much you think you could support. We'll take anything. So, Seamus, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. We are still looking for that first donor for your financial choices. And as I mentioned, we are getting towards the end of our spring fund drive. We're getting closer and closer to our goal. And we have a very good chance of wrapping things up and meeting that goal this week. The important thing is we need to make our program goals. So when we say we're trying to get 5 donations during your financial choices, we want to meet this goal so we can hit our overall goal that much faster, and then get out of the way, return to regular programming, which I'm sure you would like us to do. So your financial choices relies on your support. If you learned something over the past few months listening to Lori, if you tune in and appreciate this community resource, now is the time to show that support by becoming a member. We love our new members, but renewing and extra gifts are also appreciated. You can give at wdiy.org or call 610-758-8810.
Thank you, Seamus. And folks, we also have a match from Valley National Financial Advisors for Second Harvest Food Bank. Sorry, Seamus, I know I thought we were done, but I just remembered that.
Yes, I can talk about that. Yeah, we do have a great incentive to give right now during the fund drive, and that is our partnership with Valley National Financial Advisors. They have generously put up a matching portion of each donation that we receive during this drive that will go to Second Harvest Food Bank of the Lehigh Valley. So if you give us a donation, part of that is going to be matched by Valley National Financial Advisors with a separate donation to Second Harvest Food Bank. And so that means every donation also helps feed those in need in our community. And this is quite a generous offer from Valley National Financial Advisors. They've partnered with us doing this effort every year since 2017.
Oh, wow.
So we've been able to help feed a lot of people out there. And if you know Second Harvest Food Bank, they're not just a building that has a food pantry in it. They are a hub that distributes food all over the Lehigh Valley in Northeast Pennsylvania. They stock food pantries, rehabilitation centers, all sorts of different types of places that give this food out to families and people in need. So
it's really great. And they actually can have team building exercises. I know that our company went there one day and we got to fill and help volunteer to support filling the boxes. And it was really quite a great experience. So companies in our community also could reach out to Second Harvest Food Bank to ask ways that they can volunteer and help support them as well.
They are a wonderful organization. So your donation during the Spring Fund Drive is going to not only help WDIY, but it's also going to help Valley National Financial Advisors give that money to Second Harvest Food Bank. And that partnership goes away when the drive goes away. So this is your chance to get that in and do 2 good deeds with one donation at 610-758-8810 or WDIY.org.
Thank you, Seamus. I hope I have at least one listener who calls in and helps support the program. I really would appreciate it. So we're talking about age matters tonight, and under age 24, I had said, no, under age 19, dependent, if you meet all the dependent requirements. But once your child turns 19, you have to see if they continue to satisfy the requirements. There are income limits. Under age 24, if they are now 24, so if they're a student under 24 and you provide more than half their support, you're good to go, along with, you know, the other dependency requirements. But if they're now 24, they will no longer be your qualifying child, but they may qualify as a qualifying relative for the dependency exemption. That dependency exemption is $500. If they live with you or are related to you and they have gross income of less than $5,300 and the taxpayer provides more than half of their support. So I've had parents tell me, I of course am still supporting my child. They are 25. They're living at home. So you think they meet these statuses. They're not a student, and but they made, you know, $5,500, then they're no longer, they would not qualify, okay? Because there's a gross income test as well. All right, age 24, kiddie tax no longer applies, and those are, that's for people born in 2002. So if your child had been subject to the kiddie tax, meaning they had investment income, investment unearned income over certain amounts, then they may have been subject to the kiddie tax. But once they're age 24, they're no longer subject to the kiddie tax. Age 25, taxpayers with no children and low income may qualify for the earned income credit. Under age 26, amounts paid for health insurance for your children under age 26 qualify for the income exclusion through your employer and or through the self-employed health insurance deduction. So 26 and under, they qualify for the income exclusion through your employer and or through the self-employed health insurance deduction. So you can cover your children under age 26. That's something to keep in mind. For example, our daughter got married under age 26, and we could continue to cover her even though she was married, because for her to be on our family plan at that time was still less than what her spouse would have had to pay to cover her. So even your married children can be under age 26 can still be covered on your family health plan. That's just a little asterisk note. These next few ages or dates have to do with taking money out of retirement accounts. So remember that if you put away money on a pre-tax basis, then when you retire, you decide to take that money out, you're going to pay income tax, depending on, you know, non-Roth, I'll say. If you take it out before a certain age, you will have an early withdrawal penalty unless you qualify for an exemption. So I'm going to go ahead and talk about just a couple of those exceptions. Age 50, people born in, what would that be, 1976 or before can make, oh, this is for catch-up contributions, not taking the money out. Age 50, you can do a catch-up contribution to your IRA, simple 401k and 403b. Also, qualified public safety workers are eligible to withdraw penalty-free. So that's where that comes in. Not income tax-free, but penalty-free, and that's for qualified public safety workers. Amounts from their government-defined benefit plans if they're retired. So age 50 is time for a catch-up contribution, and or if you're a qualified public safety worker, you could take money out penalty-free. Age 55, people retiring or terminated in the year they turn age 55 are able to take monies out of their 401k without a 10% penalty, similar to the public service employees I just mentioned. This is not out of an IRA. This is out of a qualified plan. IRAs technically are not a qualified plan. So keep in mind, this would be people born in 1971 or earlier. If you terminate employment and you're 55 by the end of the year, December 31st, meaning I could terminate employment on January 1st and be 54 and turn 55 on December 31st. If in that year I terminated and turned 55 and I kept that 401k, if I needed money from that 401k, I could take it out, still subject to the income tax, but not subject to the early withdrawal penalty of 10%. So 55 is kind of like a magic age, I feel sometimes too. Like I feel less stress for people if they're working and they're 55 and they are under the threat of termination or layoffs or something like that. I think, well, whew, at least you're 55. If you have to tap money, we still could tap the 401k. That's why it's really, really important that if you do terminate employment after, you know, in the year you turn 55 or later, it's really important maybe to kind of like hang on to that 401k to make sure you're not going to need it. Because if you do need it, you can tap it without the 10% penalty. Whereas if you roll it over to an IRA, which, you know, I always felt like back in the day, advisors would be talking to people and say, yeah, roll it over, roll it over. Personally, that's conflict of interest, because if you rolled it over and now it's in an IRA at age 55, you would have a 10% penalty if you needed to take a withdrawal. So you want to be careful of that. And a side note, that also applies if you're under a quadro, a qualified domestic relations order. So at whatever age, if you are in a divorce and you got part of a retirement account from your spouse, if you need to tap the money, a quadro is an exception to a 10% penalty. That is on a qualified retirement account, not on an IRA. So really, really important things to be aware of. Age 59 and a half is the normal age that you can start taking money out of your retirement account without a penalty. You don't have to take it out. It's just that you can take it out. And again, typically subject to ordinary income tax. Unless it's a Roth, it would be subject to an ordinary income tax. You just would not be subject to the 10% penalty. I also want to mention a new catch-up contribution. It started, I think, last year. Age 60 to 63. So ding, 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 people pay attention. If you turn 60, 61, 62, or 63 in 2026, you are eligible for a catch-up contribution of $11,250. So the normal catch-up contribution, I think, in 2026 is $8,500 for people 50 or older. But for 60 to 63, it's $11,250. If you're 64, it's back to the regular. I think it's $8,500 now. So it's back to the regular amount. But between 60 and 63, I don't know why those particular ages, don't know, but it's $11,250. So keep that in mind. I will add, I'm adding lots of asterisks tonight. And here's the asterisk on that. If you made more than $145,000 in 2025, then in 2026, your catch-up contribution has to go into a Roth portion of your retirement account. So if your employer did not adopt a Roth feature for their retirement account, I don't think you get to do the catch-up. But if your employer adopted the Roth, they're required to put your catch-up contribution into the Roth portion, which means you're not getting a tax deduction for that. But the big thing is, well, you're not getting a tax deduction for it, but you were used to saving anyway. If you were completely maxing out your plan in prior years, you're not going to get the same tax savings today, but you'll get the tax savings in the future. And the other thing is, sometimes people make too much money to put into a Roth, but you can get more money into a Roth through a Roth 401k or a Roth 403b. And with those catch-up contributions for higher earners going into the Roth, you're going to be able to get more money into your Roth as well. And you still may be eligible to do the backdoor Roth as well, because they're different kinds of plans. So keep that in mind. Age 62, early Social Security, you will have reduced benefits. So people who were born in 1964, you're turning 62 this year, and you may be eligible for early Social Security. Just know that you're going to take a haircut on that benefit. We're at our last break. I'll talk to you more about that when we come back. If you have questions, you can send those through the website, yourfinancialchoices.com. You can call to help support our spring fund drive at 610-758-8810 or at wdiy.org or on the WDIY app. We'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement years, and estate distribution. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Thank you to all of WDIY's generous sustaining members. Setting up an automatic monthly gift on your credit card is the easiest way to support your listening and ensure WDIY remains a strong and thriving public resource. Become a sustaining member of WDIY today. Call 610-694-8100 extension 4 or visit WDIY.org. Thank you for your support.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert, and we have Seamus McGrogan with us with some good news, I think.
I do. I come bearing good news. And we are updating you on our spring fund drive, which is quickly approaching the end of the drive. We have three donors
to thank. I want to cry.
So we have Michael in Bethlehem. Thank you so much, Michael. Lynn in Bethlehem and Sean in Hellertown. So thank you very much. We are trying to get to the target of 5 donations by the end of your financial choices. So that means we only have 2 to go. And the way you can help support us and get us to that goal is 610-758-8810 or by going online to wdiy.org. And as I mentioned, we are coming quickly to our overall goal with the Spring Fund Drive, and we are on target to wrap up this week. But the important thing is, I want to keep stressing, we can do that as long as we continue to meet our goals program by program. So help us meet this goal right now. We're looking for 5. We are already 3 in, and we need 2 more by the end of the show. So help us out. If you haven't had a chance to give, this is a great time to make that very first time contribution to WDIY. Take that step from being a listener to a member. You could start with a $60 membership for the year, or just give whatever you can, $25, $50, maybe even break it up by $10 per month as a sustaining member as well. That's a very popular way to support the station. However you can give, it is very much appreciated. Again, 610-758-8810 or wdiy.org.
You know, Seamus, I really am quite moved always when our listeners call in. I feel like it's not only supporting the station and you guys who work here so, so hard. James, who's here all the time. Seamus is here all the time. Margaret's constantly working it. They have to work very, very hard. But it's also all the volunteers who come in. Tom Druckenmiller's sitting out there waiting right now to come in, and he's been on forever and ever. So it really shows a big sign of support. If we could get 2 more, that would be that 5. And last week I made a challenge of $500 for 5 contributions. If we could get 2 more, I'll do it like another 100. And I also want people to know that I am a big supporter of WDIY. It's not just the challenges. Seamus knows I do my giving through the United Way because I get some matching from Air Products.
That's right.
We do that every year, and that's always in addition to the grants that I'm doing. So, and we also support in other ways as well with our Hollywood Squares coming up in the fall, which hopefully people will. That was such a phenomenal event last year. But if we could get 2 more, we've got like 10 minutes, 2 more, I'll write another check. Just, you know, 100 doesn't sound like a lot, but I just want to show that additional support for these 3 callers who called in tonight. I just really appreciate that from Michael and Lynn and Sean.
No, every contribution helps, and $100 is a huge help. If that's what you can give, we very much appreciate it. If you can only give $50 or $25, that is appreciated as well. This is how we do it. This is how we meet our targets. Donation by donation, we don't expect any one person to shoulder the burden of supporting the station and all the different costs we have to keep the lights on and keep the programs going. But we rely on people giving little amounts, and it all comes together in a great show of community support.
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Seamus. Thank you, listeners. 2 more.
Again, 610-758-8810 or wdiy.org.
Thank you. So we are talking about age, and age matters. And I'm going to get to something that could also make a difference in your giving when I talk about the qualified charitable distributions that you hear Margaret doing those announcements about when we talk about charitable giving from an IRA. But let me go back to age 62, early Social Security, reduced benefits. Let me give you just some framework for this so that people can kind of have this in their mind, because I get questions about Social Security all the time. If you think about it, Social Security is based on some projection of your life expectancy based on earnings that you've had over your lifetime. And that projection of your life expectancy says you're going to live X number of years. If you collect early, they give you a haircut. And why do they give you a haircut? Because if they think you're going to live 30 years to age 92 and you collect at 62, then they're going to give you a little bit less because you're going to be going a longer period of time because maybe your actual life expectancy would have been 85 or something like that. Let me re-say that. It's based on life expectancy. So if you collect early, you're collecting for a longer period of time. If you collect later, you're collecting for a shorter period of time, so you get more. But bottom line, the present value of that future stream of money should typically be about the same. So if you're someone who has a lot of longevity in your family, maybe you wait longer because you're going to beat the odds and live longer than what Social Security has projected your life expectancy to be. Or if you're someone who everyone, you know, drops dead at 55 and you're, you know, 62, well, maybe you'd want to collect if you're not healthy or whatever, and maybe you'll beat, you know, the odds of your family and you'll collect for a little bit, but maybe not as long. All right. So just be aware of those. Then we have full retirement age, which depends on what year you were born. If you're born in 1960 or later, under today's laws, your full retirement age is 67. And all that means is you're not getting the haircut at age 67. If you wait until age 70, then they're going to give you an 8% premium each year. So just be aware of that. Everyone who was born between 1946 and 1960, it depends on what year, then your age might be 66 and 6 months, 66 and 7 months, 67, you know, it kind of it fluctuates. So you can look that up. Medicare, age 65. Age 65, that's for people turning 65 this year, 1961. Medicare is available to you at age 65. If you're working, you may not have to file for Medicare. You may have other qualified health insurance, and you may have to eventually present that and show that you had other qualified health insurance for Medicare purposes. If you don't file for Medicare at 65 and you don't have qualified health insurance, then they're going to charge you like a permanent premium going forward. So you do want to make sure that if you are eligible at 65 and you don't otherwise have qualified health insurance, perhaps through a spouse or through your employer, then you want to make sure that you're filing for that to avoid excess, you know, kind of penalty for not doing it. You may not be collecting Social Security, so you will need to address that with Medicare. Typically, your Medicare payments are taken out of your Social Security. So if you're not collecting, then you're going to have to make arrangements to pay for your Medicare programs you participate in, unless you, again, have that other qualified health insurance. Now, here's another way to give for people. Qualified charitable distributions. This comes from IRAs, and you have to be age 70 and a half or older. Age 70 and a half comes from the original required minimum distribution age we used to have years ago. They keep raising it. For people born 1960 or later, the required minimum distribution age is now 75. So they keep raising it. It was 70 and a half, then it was 72, then it was 73, and now it's 75. But they didn't change the age for people wanting to make qualified charitable distributions. It's directly from your IRA. You tell the custodian to write the check or send the money directly from your IRA to the charity, and it would not be income taxable to you. In 2026, the amount that you can contribute is $111,000. So if your required minimum distribution is $40,000, you can do $40,000, or you could do $111,000, or you could do $1,000 or $500,000 or whatever. So the amount is just capped at $111,000, but it does not have to be all of your RMD. It could be more than your RMD. It could be less than your RMD, but not more than $111,000 per person per taxpayer. Okay? So that is increasing with inflation every year. For both IRAs and qualified plans, again, that age is also age 73 going to age 75 by 2033. So IRAs and qualified plans. The reason I want to mention qualified plans in addition is if you are continuing to work and you're an employee, I told you the required minimum distribution age was 73, but if you're still working for an employer past age 73 and you're not one of the owners, then you don't have to take a required minimum distribution. So my father-in-law worked to age 93 and he never had to take a distribution from his retirement account because he was working for the same employer the entire time. He was a professor. So you want to be aware of all of these ages. So when you have an understanding of the important ages, then I think you can avoid some of the pitfalls of not staying attentive. And I think the, you know, some of the biggest takeaways tonight were those ages to avoid, you know, penalties on withdrawals from retirement accounts. I do want to go back to, I forgot to follow up with the age 65 enhanced senior deduction. So I did see where that did make a difference for some people in 2025. Let me tell you how we did a little planning for that. So at the beginning of the year, we didn't know anything about that enhanced senior deduction. So our planning at the beginning of the year might have looked different than our planning later in the year. Once we found out that there was that enhanced senior deduction, which was an extra $12,000 deduction, that impacted some of the planning that we were doing. And why would that affect it? It's because there was a phase out of that deduction for people making over $75,000 as a single person or married filing joint, and $150,000 for married filing joint, $75,000 for single. So if your income was going to be, let's pretend your income was low and I thought, oh, let's do it, maybe an IRA conversion to a Roth. If I put more income on your return, then I might have just wiped out that $12,000 deduction if it was married filing joint. So all of a sudden, where we may have been doing conversions for people, we were kind of holding back so that we could take advantage of that $12,000 deduction, because that's not going to be around forever. I think it's available through 2028. So when we can take advantage of those kinds of deductions, we try to do that. And that applies when you're 65 at any time during the year. So in 2025, for anyone who turns 65, as long as they were 65 by December 31st, and their income was below 75 if they were single, or 150 married filing joint, they would get that extra deduction. For there is a phase out though, and it's 6% for every amounts over that. So 6% reduction. So at some point it phases out and then you're not eligible for the deduction at all, but you may be eligible for some of it. So I had clients that might have been eligible for, you know, $600, and some clients were eligible for $12,000. So if you're ahead of those decisions and you know that could impact you in 2026, kind of watch out for those types of opportunities to be able to do that. The other thing is, when I have a to note, is if someone's 70 and a half and you're always writing checks out of your checking account and you have a big IRA, but you don't have a required minimum distribution yet, and you're writing all these checks out of your checking account, that's using your cash, you might want to think about doing your charitable giving at 70 and a half, even if you're not subject to the RMD, because why use your cash if you have a large IRA and you could work that down tax-free anyway. If you're going to be subject to a large required minimum distribution, then sometimes what I'll tell people is wait until you're age 73 and you have to take a required minimum distribution, and just, you know, do a couple years or a few years in that 1 year to kind of eat up some of that required amount. All right, folks, we are at the end of the show. Next week, I'm going to review the elements of your financial life so that you're aware and know how everything kind of interrelates: your cash flow, your investments, your taxes, your retirement accounts, your risk management, and your estate planning. I really appreciate the listeners and callers tonight who supported the programming here with our spring fund drive. You still can do that at 610-758-8810 or go online at wdiy.org or on the WDIY app. Thank you, James, for being here. Thank you, listeners. Thank you, Michael and Lynn and Sean. We really appreciate it. Remember, pay attention, be proactive, not reactive, and make the best of your financial choices. Have a great week.